NBC's late-night comedy show Saturday Night Live made its debut in 1975. A young writer named Lorne Michaels convinced the television network to launch the show. His creation has introduced dozens of memorable characters, from Rosanna Dana and the Blues Brothers to Hans and Franz and the Church Lady.
Good evening. I'm Chevy Chase, and you're not.
Here's how it works. Catch a bass, remove the hook, and drop the bass. That's the whole bass into the Super Bass-O-Matic 76. Now adjust the control dial.
Cheeseburger, 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 cheeseburger,
cheeseburger.
I'm Hans. I'm Franz.
And we want to pump you up.
Saturday Night Live helped launch the careers of Dan Aykroyd, Bill Murray, Gilda Radner, Eddie Murphy, Mike Myers, Dana Carvey, and many others. Washington Post columnist Tom Shales and writer James Miller have written a new book about Saturday Night Live. 27 years later, the show is still live, and Miller says that's part of what makes it a success.
If you're there in Studio 8H at 11:29 on Saturday night, there's a feeling of sheer exhilaration that you just don't get anyplace else, and I would say even with morning television, because it is so exciting, and there's always that independent variable, that weird, like, unknown factor, X factor of, you know, is somebody going to blow a line? Is a prop going to fall down? Is somebody going to go off cue cards? I mean, there's nothing like it.
Over the years, of course, NBC executives and their brilliance have suggested as a cost-saving measure that they don't do it live anymore. They do it on tape. And someone in the book says, you could record all those Jeopardy sketches in one night, you know? It's like they don't get it and they don't understand it. But thank God they keep it on the air.
It got off to a great start with these unknown people who were just fabulous. The
fabulous
original cast.
And fabulously screwed up. They had issues in the modern vernacular. And the wonderful thing was, for us, they were quite willing to talk about them now. Enough distance had gone by. I think if we'd done the book 10 years ago, then Lorraine Newman might have been less willing to say, yes, I used to be snorting heroin while Gilda was eating a gallon of ice cream.
And then throwing it up.
And then running to the bathroom, you know. People have a perspective on it now, and they really, you know, in some cases, tragically messed up their lives, as with John Belushi. But they were all wacky and a little askew and nuts in a certain way that was helpful to the show, and in ways that were also just nightmares for Lorne Michaels trying to keep this little flock of loonies, you know, intact.
Well, a lot of television, a lot of the history of television is that disparity between what people saw on cameras and what happened backstage. But I don't think there's a greater example of, you know, the differences between what the audience saw and what was going on backstage, in part because here were people that were coming on to make us laugh, and so much of their lives were incredibly tragic and sad and painful.
It reminded me a little bit of early NPR, because when you have a bunch of young people, and you have only young people, all sorts of alignments form, romantic and otherwise. There was all that going on.
But there's also a kind of magic to that, right? That Mickey and Judy putting on a show in the backyard is essentially what it boils down to. They were a bunch of crazy kids, you know, going into this terrain that no one had ever walked on before.
We are two wild and crazy guys!
I am Beldar.
I am Primat.
Okay, Beldar Conehead. That's great. Now, since you're currently employed...
close to me.
What is that bewitching scent you're wearing?
Vicks Vapor Rub.
5 years later.
Yeah, they turned out the lights and went home. And Lorne Michaels said that was it. He actually would have stayed on if NBC had given into his demand. What did he want? Just like 6 months off or something.
Right. It was incredibly exhausting. And most of the cast and Lauren, they were fried. And he wanted 6 months off. And NBC was, I think, desperate to keep it going. So he turned out the lights. And he took everybody with him. So when Gene Demanian took over, she had to start with a new cast, new writers. In fact, she said that there were a couple of writers from the original show that were willing to work for her. And then 3 weeks later, they called back and said, we changed our mind.
So this was a truly awful period in the history of this program, rescued by
Eddie Murphy. The superhero who unfortunately wouldn't talk to us for our book, because he doesn't talk to anybody about Saturday Night Live. But if it hadn't been for Eddie, we might not have had a book to write.
Absolutely. He single-handedly saved the show.
And girls, we're all alone again today. You know why? My wife walked out on me.
For what, nearly 30 years, this has been a launching pad for so many people to superstardom.
Yeah, it's like, what does Chris Rock say? It's like the Harvard of comedy. You go there, your chances are much better later on.
But it's not just the exposure, is it? I mean, it's also what you have to do, the pressure, the performance under pressure, not just being live on the air, but working a sketch together and making it work by Saturday night.
It helps so much. Well, it's almost mandatory that you are able to write as well as perform, even though you're hired as a performer. And some people just can't take it. Sherry O'Terry was just sort of reduced to a mass of tears, and she said, quite frankly, it was emotionally too draining for her to, you know, worry about whether her sketch was going to get on and to write as well as perform. And she wasn't too happy on the show.
No, but part of it is because on Saturday night, you could get up there and you could do a fantastic job, get tons of laughs from the audience. People are talking about it on Sunday. And the cruel fact of Saturday Night Live is on Monday morning, you start with a blank piece of paper, just like everybody else, and you're trying to compete against all the other cast members for spots in next Saturday's show.
We went to those meetings, and it's painful to see people shot down, as it were.
Yeah. Are you surprised people still have these feelings years later of either joy or great bitterness towards somebody over something that happened backstage? I mean, there were fist fights back there during the show.
Oh, yeah, there was. I'm not sure it was a full-fledged fight, but it started out to be, and then everybody dragged Chevy and Bill Murray, and John was part of it, and it was a big mess. It was the beginning of the era of Chevy finding out that he wasn't dearly beloved by everyone around there. But he was tremendously good on that show, and who knows if it would have gotten on the map so quickly if it hadn't been for Chevy and his Gerald Ford impressions.
Mr. President, you said that the Humphrey-Hawkins bill will cost a possible $60 billion. But isn't it true that the jobs provided by the bill will create up to $150 billion in increased production?
It was my understanding that there would be no math during the debates.
One of the important things about its early success was that it was so hip. Is it still hip? And would any of the three of us be in a position to know? I mean, look at us.
I think it has a kind of renewable hipness. I mean, partly because they'll bring on the hippest, you know, hip-hop group, among other things.
There were a couple of times when they probably should have pulled the plug.
Oh, but then where would we be? I mean, I think it's an important part of our national fabric. I think it's really important somehow that we have that Saturday night satirical show. So many times, clips from it will end up on the Sunday morning news shows. You know, it's become news as well as satirizing news.
Washington Post critic and Morning Edition commentator Tom Shales and writer James Miller. Their new book is called Live from New York, An Uncensored History of Saturday Night Live.